Well, thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Got an interesting program for you today, and it has to do with vocal patterns. Luckily for, you know, if you're a comedian, you can sometimes make a pretty good living talking in the same vein as some of the people who are very well known and kind of maybe poking fun at them a little bit for their speech patterns. Some of those patterns are just affectations. Others, sometimes I think, we'll find out in just a minute, I think can do some damage to the voice. Larry Mueller here, so great to have you along today. We're going to learn about vocal fry, which has become a hot topic and a common vocal pattern because of some high-profile people who do it. And Carol Togliano is a senior clinical speech pathologist with UW Health, knows a lot about it, and just in general, a lot about voice and voice speech and voice issues. So it's great to have her along, and I hope you'll join in as we visit today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Maybe you've heard of vocal fry before. Maybe you haven't. Wonder if you're doing it. Are you doing it? Well, maybe when you phone in, we'll find out. And maybe you wonder what a speech pathologist like Carol does. She's happy to talk about her profession as well. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And Carol Togliano, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us today. You know, on my way over, I was at my other office, and I was about to come over, and there's a young woman who works in our office, and she often asks me what I'm going to talk about on the show. And I said, I'm going to talk about vocal fry. And she looked at me like, what is that? I have never heard of vocal, you know. And I thought, all right, I hear somebody probably in her 20s, mid-20s, or maybe late 20s. I would have expected her to know that. But from what is vocal fry? I'm sure a lot of people mm-hmm. are like her.
That's a good question. A lot of people use it. I think most people use it to some degree without being aware of necessarily sure. what it is.
Yeah.
But vocal fry, when we produce it, it results in a popping noise in our voice, and it tends mm-hmm. to happen when we're kind of getting towards the ends of our sentences or towards the ends of phrases or getting lower in pitch. If I produce it in isolation, it sounds like this.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, and you're saying that most or maybe all of us use it at some point.
At some point, yeah. Mm-hmm. Historically, you know, there's been a lot of confusion. If you use a lot of it, it doesn't sound good, and so it's been kind of vilified as being this evil thing. I think but studies show that we actually do quite a lot of it here in America, women especially, towards the ends of their sentences.
So they tend
to. I just did a little there.
Yeah, you did. You did a little bit there. So, and damaging, does it damage?
That's a good question. So vocal fry in and of itself isn't damaging, and it's something that we all do to some extent, so it's not considered technically abnormal, but it's something that you don't do with a lot of volume. And if you try to do it with a lot of volume, or if you try to use it as a replacement for normal voice and normal talking,
that'd be a strain.
It would be very straining. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I would think so. Do you ever instruct people to do it? Use it?
Or? Yes, I do.
Oh, mm-hmm. you do. Mm-hmm. And under what kinds of circumstances?
Sometimes when I'm working with very specific patients who are having a hard time kind of relaxing their throats in a certain way, it's an effective therapy tool.
Oh, mm-hmm. okay. So you have them do it, just practice it or what?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, read actually, some sentences and give me some vocal fry, I guess.
Get some vocal fry and get the throat to relax a little bit, exactly.
Well, you know what? We have some clips that we're going to listen to over time, and I know it's been a hot news item because of maybe Kim Kardashian. There are some actresses out there in particular who seem to use it a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's gotten a lot of news lately. But, you know, it goes back. Mae West, oh my goodness, I watched about 30 clips of Mae West doing Vocal Fry, and she was such a wonderful actress and comedian. And I was sitting in the office just laughing up a storm. Now, we have some very a short clip of her, and so let's listen and see if we can detect the vocal fry here.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Isn't that fun?
All right, so now let me just that once more. Listen to, now tell me why this is vocal fry.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Yeah?
I'm better, yep. Can you hear the little pops towards the end?
Right at the end. Mm-hmm. Right at the end of each little short sentence that she mm-hmm. said. And that's vocal fry.
Yes.
Well, she, I was thinking the one that I got a big kick out of was her saying, anytime you've got nothing to do and a lot of time to do it, come up and see me. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, a lot better than I did. Oh my gosh. So, I mean, we're all influenced by the culture that we live in. Are there some current cultural trends? I mentioned, you know, one celebrity who have really made it appealing. Is it Kardashian? Is it her? Or are there others?
The Kardashian sisters have been getting a lot of flack for using a lot of vocal fry. Yeah, they've been receiving a lot of criticism. If you go into the internet and type in Kardashian and fry, you see a lot of people on YouTube denigrating them for using this evil voice quality. So I think for various reasons there are a lot of there's been a lot of renewed interest in vocal fry and whether or not it's normal and what it means. There's a few research studies done just in the last few years kind of looking at vocal fry trends in American speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did a study looking at young American women in New York. And they showed that about roughly 90% of all the speakers that they interviewed used vocal fry towards the end of their sentences.
Wow. And is it purposeful? I mean, are they doing it on purpose? Or
a lot of them aren't aware they're doing it, but there's probably a combination of factors at play as to why they're doing it.
Yeah,
but
talk
a lot
about
of it's cultural.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cultural.
Yeah. So they've looked at, some studies have looked at whether or not it's what listeners' perceptions are of speakers who use glottal fry. And in women in particular, it's going to be very culture dependent. But there was a study done a few years ago looking at, you know, where they asked open-ended questions to listeners. And what do you think of this speaker who, you know, compared to this speaker? And they'd compare two different utterances, one that had a lot of fry towards the end of the utterance and some that did not. And it was interesting that the speakers, of course, this was all the listeners generally, I think, and this is notable, were also young Americans.
Yeah.
But their perception of the speakers who used fry actually were more positive.
Okay.
Than the speakers who did not. And then there are some other studies looking at different methodologies that showed the opposite. Women who use more fry are considered less educated or less friendly, or less hireable.
But among the peer group, among their peers, it sounds like among other young people, they were thinking it sounded better.
It sounded better. Mm-hmm.
So I could see why people would be doing it. If it sounded, you know, if it sounds better to you as a young person, you're going to want to probably imitate it a little
bit. Mm-hmm.
Talking today with Carol Toliano, who is senior clinical speech pathologist with UW Health, visiting about vocal fry right now, which is kind of, to me, really an interesting area to talk about. And you may have some questions about it. Maybe you have vocal fry, or maybe you're interested in wondering if you're doing it. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Can also deal with other kinds of speech issues as well, and voice issues. So don't forget about those as well. Call us in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And so it seems to be that young women send... It's more associated, I guess, with young women, is it not? And you see them using it more than, say, others?
Well, so this same group that did the study on the women a few years later did a study on young American men, and they found that while they still use Fry, they used it much less than the women did.
Okay. And is it because of the tonal range? I mean, women are tend to be a little... Frankly, our pitch, their normal pitch is a little higher than men's.
No one really knows the answer to that. I think if you know, they've done some studies in England where actually the opposite is true. Men were more likely to use Fry than women.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it's certainly there are certainly cultural and social factors at play. But I think in America, and this is just my opinion, is that women are frequently perceived in the workplace. They have to deal frequently with a bit of a quandary that they need to be perceived as competitive with men. So there has been some speculation that women are more likely to lower their pitch to do that, but then they get vilified for being a little overly aggressive. And so
you can't win for losing.
Yeah. So vocal fry has been perceived as a way of kind of mitigating that.
In the middle rate of things. Very interesting. Well, it certainly happens in men, as you point out. And we have one from a very famous example of Noam Chomsky. And this is from 1994, so when he was quite a bit younger.
That's more or less accurate, I guess, although, you know, I do plenty of things that are quite totally self-indulgent. I even think increasing now that I have grandchildren.
Self-indulgent, including using lots of Glottal Fry.
Well, yeah, you can certainly hear it there. Oh, my goodness me. We have another... Well, maybe we should just do it. Zoe Chace from National Public Radio, Planet Money. You want to listen to her? Let's listen to Zoe.
That ship has sailed. Like, this Euro project is not going away. And that was hard to convey to our editors. And I think that's why we got so attracted to these history stories. We tried to show what a long project this has been.
Oh, yeah, right there at the ends of all our phrases. Yeah.
End of every single phrase. That little, what do you call it? A little drop in voice and a little, I'm having trouble copying it right now. It's kind of like a growl, maybe.
Yeah, it's a drop in pitch, and with that comes a drop in airflow, and you kind of do start doing this.
All right, let's go on here.
There it is, you got it.
Judith Sears Poisson, I bet, can do it too. She's our producer today and taking the calls. I'm Larry Mueller talking with Carol Toliano about vocal fry and other voice issues as well. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Call in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're learning about the common speech pattern called vocal fry and wondering whether it's doing damage to our young people's voices. You can join in again, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Lots of people online, so let's go to the phones. And John and Sainer. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
How are you doing, Larry?
Great. Appreciate the call.
See, I think that vocal fry is a natural thing, mostly. I listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Bill, his name on there, does the limericks.
Yeah.
He's made a living with the vocal fry, with his voice. The thing I don't understand, what's your guest name?
Our guest name is Carol Toliano.
Yes, and she's a speech pathologist.
Yes, I am.
Yes, she is.
Yes, and she annoys me. Every sentence she says, she ends it with a higher note.
Oh, up talking. I don't know. I disagree with you, John, because I don't think she does it all at every single time. But, hey, you should speak for yourself.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so that's actually the idea of up-talking is something that I think has also been linked with glottal fry, that when people I think oftentimes when people are criticizing glottal fry, what mm-hmm. they're also criticizing is up-talk.
Mm-hmm.
When it's coupled with glottal fry like that, it's I would agree that can sound a little bit obnoxious.
Yeah, if it's done all the time,
but you know that is again it's a matter of personal choice and personal aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at one point people were concerned that people who did too much uptalk, women specifically who did too much uptalk, were considered less. Like they were going to be less successful. And the research actually has shown that that's not the case at all.
Yeah. Back in the day, I dated a woman who was up-talked every sentence. and actually, I don't know if it was the reason we eventually broke up, but it was... She had me doing it after a while.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I had to get out of it. I had to get out of that habit of doing it every single sentence. You don't do it every sentence.
Well, thank you.
Not at all. Karen and Madison, your turn next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. You touched on some of the issues, especially about women's expression, women's voice. But is there... some kind of a book or something that women could access so that they do come across feeling confident? Because I do think that raising the voice at the end of the sentence, it's almost like a question mark. Do you agree with me? You know, and there are other speech patterns that women have, and women are often caught in a quandary, like you said. You know, you're perceived, if you're assertive, you're perceived as aggressive. If you, and if you backpedal and you're compliant, then you don't get anywhere. And like the gentleman that called and criticized or complained that he was bothered by your voice. His voice was like a punch. Meaning, you know, like the words came out really strong and straight and powerful. And men have a different speech pattern that way. So are there resources women can get where they, if they want to, can develop ways of speaking that are helpful to them and that they can convey their own thoughts, feelings, and confidence in that?
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Makes sense, and I think you should do exactly as you're talking now, to be perfectly honest. That's my feeling, because I thought you were talking in what I perceive to be your normal voice. But let's turn to Carol here and see what she's got to say.
Yes, well, you know, I work with a lot of disordered voices, so during the context of that, we may address some of those types of issues.
Yeah.
But the kind of issue you're describing... probably are best managed by somebody who's more of a speech communication person to explain and kind of help deal with those issues. It's interesting that you bring those things up, because I'm not by any stretch of the imagination an expert in any of those things. But I do know, what I do know is that women, like you said, are more likely to use a little uptalk. They're more likely to slow their voices down towards the ends of phrases and come to more of a complete stop, like I just did right there, because of social and cultural factors. Here in America, anyway, we do that. And so it's a lot more like we're inviting the person that we're talking to kind of verify that they are agreeing with what we're saying.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Right. And invite them to talk. And so there's some clear factors there. When I'm working with women who have voice disorders, sometimes their voice disorder makes it hard for them to keep going quickly, and so they're getting interrupted more often. And so under those circumstances, sometimes I teach them a little bit more, that, you know, talk like a man.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're going to change your intonation pattern at the end of your utterance a little bit, so that you can keep, you're signaling to your listener that you want to keep going. You're not done yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And thank you for your expertise and the discussion. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Karen.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Karen, for calling. And I do like her voice. I mean, it's, to me, it's a voice that sounded like her normal voice. Didn't sound like she was trying to, I mean, it was a conversational voice that was, that sounded like she knew what she was wanted to talk, say, mm-hmm. and she was saying it. So, if that means, if anybody can figure out what I just said and the meaning behind it, good for you. Diane in New Berlin, you're next. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
And what's on your mind?
Well, I am 60 years old, and I've noticed some voice changes, and it just seems like, I listen to my mother, who's 90, her voice constantly is in glottal fry, and is there any way to avoid that or to change it? Because I feel like my voice is changing as I'm getting older, and I've noticed just personally, if I just speak a little higher, just raise the tone of my voice just to a little bit higher than my normal speaking voice, I don't have that fry sound in my voice. But if I speak normally, it seems to show up a little more often. So I don't know if that's anything that your guest has any experience with. And I'm just wondering if there's any way for me to prevent my voice from being permanently fried.
Oh, that's a great way to put it, permanently fried.
I love that.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's something that we do get that a lot in our clinics, people coming in. So as the voice ages, and this happens to men and women's voices, the vocal folds are, I call them vocal folds. People often call them vocal cords. They're really the same thing.
Yeah.
They're made of muscle and ligament and an outer lining and epithelium. And as we age, as we all know, we have changes to our muscles and changes to our skin. And so the net result in the aging voice is that things just kind of shrink up a bit. And the vocal folds, the way they work, is then as they're shaped like a V when we breathe, and then as you produce a voice, the legs of the V come closer together. And if there's been some wasting away of some of the tissue, gosh, I'm making it sound much more horrible than it should be.
No, that's exactly right.
Then the vocal folds don't meet each other as well during the vibration.
Yeah.
And so what the result can be a breathier voice is often the case, or particularly as we get lower in pitch and the vocal folds get a little more slack and lax, and then that issue just shows up much more prominently. And so some people will, as you say, fry more as they get lower in their pitch range.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's exactly what you've noticed, is that if you go a little bit, if you just pitch it a little bit higher, it can kind of compensate for that kind of issue. I think the first thing to know is that if anyone experiencing vocal changes to that extent, if it bothers them, there's probably something that can be done about it. And
oh, really?
Yes, yes. So a lot of people, a lot of people are hoarse, and they come to our clinic and they just want to make sure nothing bad's going on. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
and they leave happy campers. And but there are other people coming in who know it gets in their way. It gets in their way of their communicating. It's straining to talk. They find they're not participating in social activities the way they would like to be able to, because they just it's too much effort to talk, or they can't project over noise. And under those circumstances, there are definitely things we can do for those people.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think in general, preserving your voice, your voice is sort of like a a window into your general health.
Yeah, sure.
It really is. And so sometimes things show up there if you haven't been taking good care of yourself, if you don't get enough sleep. Some of the, you know, we all know the first thing that can happen is if you don't get enough sleep, if you're tired, if you're sick, you wake up the next day and your voice is shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in general, taking good care of your body and taking good care of yourself will help you with your voice.
Oh, okay. So no gargling or exercises or anything like that. It's just if I really want to tackle this, I need to speak to a speech pathologist.
If you have concerns for yourself, then yes, I would definitely encourage you to see an otolaryngologist and a speech pathologist, ideally a team that work together, and mm-hmm. they can kind of look at the reason why, and this goes for anybody, look at the reason why someone is experiencing some specific vocal difficulties, and then sometimes exercises can be prescribed. That's mm-hmm. why I have a job. and sometimes there are procedures that can be done to help address those mm-hmm. issues.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your help here.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks a lot for calling. And just let's take that a step or two further. Now, if you want to talk to a speech pathologist or an otolaryngologist, typically you're not going to just go straight to them. If you're on some sort of health insurance, you first need to go. Typically, you'd have to get a referral, or
right. Often, I think it often depends on the type of insurance, but
okay.
For sure, yep. Many times the referrals are generated by people's primary care.
Yeah.
Providers.
Uh-huh.
I think the thing to know is that, you know, in the field of speech pathology, in the field of otolaryngology, there are lots of areas of subspecialization. And so speech pathologists, by and large, work with people who have had strokes, for example, when you work in the adult population, uh-huh. specifically people who are having problems with their speech, people who are having problems expressing themselves from a language standpoint. And so voice is one of those things that isn't as common to specialize uh-huh. in. And so that is part of the key as well, is you want to work with somebody who has had a little extra training and a little extra experience doing that.
Frank in Oshkosh, thanks a lot for waiting. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I originally am a German speaker, so I came to this country, had speech therapy, which in turn made me very aware of vocal patterns and the way people use language. So my question is with the vocal patterns, do people sometimes, not being aware of it, try to denote their socioeconomic class, whether they're upper class, middle class, by the way they speak? And I see it, this is just anecdotally, with the use of like the hypersibilant S on the end, or the use of the word like. Mm-hmm. And if you could comment on that, specifically concerning class, if people try to denote their class. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And so what we do know is that vocal fry is certainly a physical phenomenon, but it's also and a linguistic one, but it's also a social one. And in different cultures, it may mean different things. In our culture, you know, the way it's been studied in a few different ways. A few years ago, they did a study where they took a recording of various speakers and they separated them out in the recordings onto speakers who had vocal fry towards the end of their utterances and speakers who did not. And whether or not they were doing it intentionally is really, I think, hard to say.
Sure.
I think a lot of us do it without necessarily intending. It just kind of happens, even though it can be done intentionally for sure. And those speakers with the vocal fry towards the end of their utterance were generally perceived more often to be well-educated, professional, upwardly mobile, but also informal and non-aggressive. But these, so for sure, there's definitely a distinction there. I think there's also a distinction, however, in there's the fry that's naturally present towards the end of utterances, which men and women do. Women in America do it a lot more than men in America do it, at least according to the studies that have been done to date. Vocal fry that's present kind of all the time, like in that Noam Chomsky clip that you played earlier.
Yeah.
That's something that's more often considered. It's considered different, and so there was a study where they had the same speaker speak with fry throughout their utterance and with fry and without fry through their utterance, and those speakers were with fry were generally felt to be less hireable, and I think sort of unfairly, because oftentimes it's due to when that happens, it may be more often be due to a physical factor.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay. Jack had a Facebook comment who said, seems like on Sunday and Saturday and Sunday afternoons shows on NPR, it seems like the young men and women use it to sound more sophisticated.
Yeah.
That could be.
It could be. It's again, it's hard to know because I think, you know, I find myself using it, you know, now, once you start talking about it and you think about it, gosh, I've got some fry present at the end of my utterances. And I wasn't tending to. It just happened. What's interesting is to me is if you go to the internet and you look up on YouTube, there are people that are condemning glottal fry, and they've got little clips condemning glottal fry. But if you listen to them talk while they're condemning glottal fry, they're using it. So, which is very funny.
Oh, man. Patty and Wild Rose, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hi. My question is, you know, I've always had this voice that's kind of hoarse and airy, and I've been to otolaryngologists, but only within the last 6 months or so, I've had this vocal fry that's involuntary, and I am a vocalist as well, and it has interfered with my vocalizing. You know, phonating in vocal music. So I wondered, is there a reason why this vocal fry would start involuntarily at some point?
For sure there could be. And of course, without, you know, seeing your personal vocal cords, I can just only comment in general. But oftentimes it is associated with something going on, whether it's a change in the tone of the vocal fold muscles, or they're the introduction of, you know, some change of the vocal fold mucosa. Just physiologically, there could be lots of different reasons for it. Part of the challenge there is if you're experiencing vocal symptoms and you're noticing them, and, you know, sometimes you go to a general otolaryngologist and they're not necessarily going to have all the right equipment to really properly assess. And sometimes they're looking for more, you know, just great big obvious pathology. You know, is there a great big lump on the vocal folds that's easy to see? And it's not always that simple. And so if you feel like you're having those symptoms, you know, it may not mean anything bad, but it's real. And so I would just go in pursuit of somebody who maybe specializes in the assessment of voice disorders a little more.
In a few minutes, we'll have an otolaryngologist on the show, as a matter of fact. Aaron Wheeland will be with us. But I wanted to get another comment here. From Laura from Green Bay, who emailed in, I have an acquaintance who lacks confidence. She often fades off in vocal fry after speaking for a few minutes, and I interpret it, and this is Laura speaking, I interpret it as insecure. Sometimes it sounds like whining a little bit to her. Mm. That seems opposite of what I'm hearing discussed between you, between the two of us here on the radio.
So I'm sorry, I missed a little bit. So she's feeling that she's...
She says she's interpreting it. Well, this is a woman who... her friend lacks confidence. So she often fades off into vocal fry after just speaking for a few minutes. She, Laura, interprets her friend as being insecure and sometimes as whining a bit. And this seems opposite of what she's hearing us discuss.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think it depends on how often you're using the glottal fry. If you're using glottal fry throughout the utterance, that then generally gets perceived as a poor hoarse voice quality. And so it's not necessarily interpreted as being a positive thing. So in those cases, I can see why it may sound that way to you if your friend's talking that way.
Yeah.
Yes, and here and now I am using lots of uptalk.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Because I'm not done with my what I have to say, so I'm using it to signal I'm not done with the end of my sentence. So for sure, I think it's a matter of degree and it's a matter of when. So if you're producing lots of glottal fry, as she's talking more and more, it's becoming more and more pervasive. She might be getting tired. She might be getting quote unquote lazy with her breathing, or tense.
Tensing up a bit.
As you say, mm-hmm. For sure. And so it's not necessarily always a good thing.
Should talk about here we are starting to run out of time here, and there's so many more things we can talk about. But you have some talk about the work that you're doing, this project that you're working on.
We have a clinical fellow in our clinic. Everybody in our clinic does some sort of research. Mm-hmm. And we have a clinical fellow in our clinic. Her name is Emily Malik. And she's heard me commenting here and there that the norms that we use when we're assessing voice disorders may need some revision because they were done 50 years ago. And so one of the measures that we would take in a clinical setting is what someone's habitual most pitches. So where are we kind of gravitating around when we're talking in terms of pitch? And it's considered to be pathologic if it's abnormally high or abnormally low. And so the measures that we're using seem to be very often pitched higher than what obsessing.
Yep, yep.
So the question is there a change there because there's been a change in how we speak over time. And so she's collecting new norms.
Interesting. I suppose no findings yet, but trends probably she could talk
about.
Just
getting started, yes.
Well, are you going to bring her back, drag her back over here sometime and talk?
Oh, sure. I'm sure she'd love that.
I'd love to have you back as well, Carol. It was really a lot of fun, and we can talk about vocal fry anytime, but we can also talk about a whole lot of other things that you spend most of your time with,
mm-hmm.
Other than vocal fry.
Yeah. I'd say vocal fry is probably a very small percentage of what I spend my time doing. I really appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much. That was really a fun and interesting conversation. I love it when we can connect science and medicine to what's going on in our culture. Coming up next, we're going to find out about a fast, easy, and painless cancer screening that could save your life and how that cancer is linked to one of the most common human viruses. So I want you to stay tuned. Don't go away here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.